Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, don't you just love animals? And don't they just love you? How much do they love you? Are they willing to talk to you? Are they willing to give you advice? Maybe a lot of advice. Well, we're going to find out how much advice they have for us by speaking with a woman who has written an incredible book called We Walk Beside You, Animal Messages for an Awakening World. And that's so perfect. And Sandra Mendelson, welcome to Energy Stew. I'm so glad that you wrote this book.
Thank you. It's very, very good to be here. You got me smiling already, so.
Well, I've so enjoyed this journey of what happened with you, to you, about you, and for the world, and how it all started, because not everybody hears from animals the way you do, and you didn't even know that you did until all of a sudden, wasn't it a horse that, you know, put you on the spot?
I could say that in a very unglamorous way. Yes. About 5 years ago, and no, I did not hear animals as a child. I loved the movie Dr. Doolittle and wanted to ride in a giant pink snail, but that was about it. So I was doing polychromatic light therapy, which is a kind of healing treatment on a horse's foot. And I was alone in the barn, and it was bitter cold. There was no one else there. And I heard a voice boom loudly in my head. This hay is crap. And about 5 minutes later, one of the horse moms came in and announced that there's mold all over the hay. So it started in that very simple, okay, no big deal kind of way.
Yeah, and you had corroboration that a horse was complaining to you about something you had no idea about. Why am I hearing this?
That's exactly right. And, you know, about a couple of weeks later, this same horse was rehabbing from an injury. And typically when horses are starting to be ridden again, the veterinarian or the trainer will give him a little bit of sedative so he doesn't overdo it and re-injure himself. Normally, if I offered a carrot up to this horse, I was in risk of losing a finger. And this time, while he was waiting to be ridden, I presented a carrot and he wouldn't touch it. And the voice came back, "Get me out of here." About 5 seconds later, trainer comes around and overdoses him on sedative, and his head almost hits the floor.
Wow.
So, you know, little things like that where you're going, okay, wait a minute, what's going on? I didn't make this up. And it proceeded from there. You know, a few weeks after that is when my entire life changed. And I heard, if you will, things from a horse that I could not make up. That was so beyond my scope of understanding of what animals know and how they live and what they perceive, that it took me a full 3 years after that, solving problems by getting answers from animals, you know, when the humans couldn't figure out what was wrong with them. And, you know, before I could really believe what I had heard from the horses, you know, I was a skeptic, like most humans. I needed 3 good years of, okay, fine, whittling me down, this is real, and how on earth could you know this stuff? Yeah.
And it's so amazing how this hearing works, because it's not your thinking. It's words that come to you in your mind that you're listening to.
Or so I thought. You know, I had a squirrel set me right. He said, it's not your brain or your ears that are doing the listening.
Right.
You're up these messages another way through collective consciousness.
But you're hearing it in your head.
Right, my way. And there's about 8 different skill sets, you could say, that humans possess. And you don't know which ones you possess until you experiment with it. Right. And through these means, we can hear messages from animals, whether we feel it in our body or we see an image with our eyes closed, or in my case, you hear, or you just have that sense of instant knowing. These are all 6 sensory abilities that humans possess, but nowhere in our society are they ever cultivated or encouraged.
Right, and you and I can talk because I'm also a practicing intuitive and have even taught thousands of people over many years to at least become intuitive in some way, some form, and everybody's different in the way that we're intuitive. And I'd like to share with you one incident I had of hearing from an animal, because a couple called me who I never heard from before, and I didn't know who they were. And this woman said, can we come in? Can you work with dogs? And I said, I don't know. No one's ever asked me that before. She said, well, our dog broke his leg and we'd like to come see you. You're an intuitive healer. And so we'd like to come and see what you have to say. So the two of them came in with their dog, and I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden the dog says, let me tell you why I broke my leg. And I say, okay, whatever. And the dog says, well, I had to break my leg because I needed to keep this couple together, because I'm afraid of losing them. And I felt that if I broke my leg, it would cause them to want to be together to help me. So I shared that with this couple, and I had, you know, I had no idea about their marriage or anything. And they said to me, well, that's too bad because we just signed our separation papers this morning. So that dog was doing his best, and it's amazing. So that says a lot about what animals are up to.
Yes, what their intentions are and how intentional they are. There are no accidents. They don't just show up. They choose, like you, and what they do and how they do it.
They influence, yes.
And the fact that you just validated, these are gifts we all have. And you just allowed it through you. You know, you have enough training to know you possess these skill sets, and look at that breathtaking message that you got. So
right. So these messages make sense. But then again, your book, you speak to almost every kind of animal there is.
Well, there's a lot more than that, but you know, you can only fit so much in one book.
Right. And I know you're working on another. Maybe there are amoebas that are going to talk to you.
Just show up in the next book.
So what's fascinating is the diversity of the animals who speak to you, and also because of the kind of animals they have different purposes to bring different messages, and different purposes in life too. And but what's fascinating is that, and as that you talk about in the book, they actually work with the energy grid. And so they're not just coming from their own brains, because they wouldn't know all the things they know if they weren't tuned into. They call it the energy grid. I call it the universal computer.
Perfect, because I actually had a gorilla tell me, you know, that most communication is through the thought stream. And like the squirrel said, they get their energy from this grid. He said, it's like our internet, except we don't need computers. I'm surprised you humans do.
Well, we only think we do. I believe that we're all reading on an unconscious level. We're reading so much, and our lives are kind of proscribed through that unconscious knowing and through scripts and patterns that we're here to live in our lives, as the animals are too. And what's remarkable is that we also use this quantum field, universal computer, that they use. And what I loved hearing about in your book is what the birds are doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't, you know, I had no idea. In fact, I think it was a rhino that told me. Or a tiger, forgive me. It was a tiger that told me. The rhino talked about dreaming, another topic. Tiger told me animals don't all get their energy in the same way. That birds are mercurial and get their energy from the transmission of information. So when they showed up, they said, you know, we are like this, you know, greater than Wi-Fi. There is no cell zone. You know, we fly everywhere. We are an information grid over your heads. So their job is to transmit information, carrying threads that others act upon.
They're like satellites.
Yeah, exactly. Relaying information. That's
and they're picking it up from above. I was thinking, because I've always said that animals have this extra sense, and so when that big tsunami was in the Pacific, they knew how to get out of the way because of their extra sense, whereas humans don't know how to use it, our extra sense as well. And yet, perhaps it was also that the birds were sending messages to those animals.
Yes, that's exactly what the birds say. And in fact, I think the squirrels laid out the how do animals get their information, bang, 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 very clearly. The birds and the horse, the very first horse that blew my mind, said, you know, we hear the birds speak, the plants speak. Everything speaks.
Oh my gosh, it gives me chills.
Because you know it's true. So yes, birds transmit information. They also intuitively feel, they read energy fields, which is why your dog knows when you're coming around the bend or you're coming home. Rupert Sheldrake did amazing work. Dogs know when their owners are coming home. No matter where they planted the hidden cameras, no matter when that owner came home, dog always knew. Tap into your energy field. So they tap into energy fields. They get information from the birds. They tap into the grid where all experience goes. I mean, it's hard for you to get your arms around it as a human. Dogs see something on TV where they experience them in the grid. Everything goes in the grid.
And for us too. And so we aren't as aware of it as the animals are.
Exactly.
And so we're learning from them. That's why, another reason why your book, We Walk Beside You, is so important, because it really helps us understand the greater nature of all of life and how we can be inspired by so much of it. And, you know, and there's so much teaching in your book also. And you've been learning, you know, you were taught some lessons by a rat, for instance, that you had disgust and revulsion about.
Yeah, which does not exist in the animal world. They said, you know, and they described in detail, multiple species talk about the reason for fighting. Humans have been way off about that. Let's just move that to the side for a minute. But a grasshopper told me, we do not experience revulsion when we encounter another in form or in energy. Revulsion is unique to the human world. It has been conditioned.
Well, we have opinions about things in ways that animals, you know, they take it more naturally. They understand the life itself, they understand, you know, live and die and, you know, the purpose of life and death, so that they, because they can accept that, they can die.
Well, and their experience of what death is very different than ours. I mean, when people ask me, you know, why should we care about what animals have to say? Why will it help us? The very first thing that always comes to mind is, imagine never looking in a mirror once. Imagine how much happier you would be, because you are not focused on the shell. The shell is just something to love and take care of, but not identify with.
And yeah, a lot of animals are pretty grotesque, and yet they love each other.
They love themselves. So they are taught there is no difference between loving me and my loving you. To them, it is all one thing. We learn them as two separate things. Another thing is, from what many species tell me, is death is a human construct. I mean, my favorite quote, which of course is committed to memory now, is from a skunk. When I put it out there, I said, okay, who wants to talk about death? And a skunk steps forward, if you will, in my mind. I'll talk about death because to us, there is no such thing. It is a human construct. We just hang out in our bodies for a little while until they start to break down. And then we get a new one, like a car. And if you think we keep picking the same make, model, and color over and over again, you couldn't be more wrong. We pick different vehicles for different lessons. This time, I'm a skunk. Next time, a porpoise. Or a walrus. Or even a human. But you have to be ready for that, because it's complicated, and you have to live in your head and have your senses dumbed down. Yeah. I get a headache just thinking about it.
I think that's more rare. I think animals like to be animals, you know, in nature. rather than us complicated, difficult,
well,
limited beings.
You know what? This is another thing that they get. And if we knew this, see, they know and we believe. Big difference. You know, there's no question. To them, you don't know what you know you're coming back, but you don't know as what, because you don't know what form will hold the lessons that your soul needs to learn. So, you know, I asked a crow, what were you? He said, I was a cat, I was a bull, I was a snail. I said, what about a human? He said, not yet, but stay tuned. So, it's not like you choose. Your soul chooses. Your personality doesn't choose.
I like the idea of choosing power animals for ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Or they choose us. I once did a shamanic journey where I was looking for my power animal, and I was passing all these great animals in the journey going, I hope it's you. I'd love for you to be my power animal. And they all ignored me. Until all of a sudden, I get grabbed on the shoulder. I learn to look around, and it's an owl, and saying, guess what? And that was it. And it makes sense for me that it's an owl. It made too much sense. I'd rather be maybe an elk or something, you know.
Once again, do you get to choose, or is it what you need, right?
Well, right. I mean, I certainly have my limitations, human limitations, that there are some animals that I think could make up for it. Obviously, I'm supposed to have those limitations.
And, yeah,
well, we all have our opportunities. And so there's so many lessons in this. And I learned a lot about lions in here that was cool, because they were talking about how they fight, mm-hmm. and why they fight, and why a lion who beats his opponent will kill the opponent's offspring. Mm-hmm. That sounds totally cruel, but the way it looks like is that, you know, it's survival of the species. The strongest will survive better, and so, you know, the offspring of a weak lion might likely be weaker than the offspring of a strong lion.
So. Well, they described it as, you know, and again, there are differences across species. You know, the big cats are dead serious. You know, the lions and the tiger, they come across seriously.
Yeah.
And to the lion, you know, to that species, power is something that is earned. And so they said you have to sever the bloodline, because the bloodline is linked to power.
Well, that's the point. And the power keeps the species alive.
Makes sense to me. I mean, I certainly can refine that conversation. Excuse me, I have a few more points I'd like to bring up and see if I can. You know, humans always need the details, and the animals just, you know, get to the point.
Right. And what I like is that the lion also said they don't fight pride to pride. They fight lion to lion.
I love that. No gang wars, they said.
Yeah, right.
But when they fight, we always think they're fighting for a mate. They're like, you know, you should tell this to the behaviorists who are off the mark. I'm like, okay, I'm not picking fights with anybody. But the battle is as much an energetic one as it is a physical one. That the winner is more evolved, is a better leader, is a better diplomat, negotiate arguments between them better, you know, so that's who wins.
Right, but, you know, but then again, there are other ways of looking at battles that people can, or I'm thinking of people who might be winning battles, but in the end are gonna lose the war because they're tricky, or, you know, arrogant. They are reaching a lower denominator, mm-hmm. and becoming powerful through, you know, a lower energy, that in the end, you know, it's self-destructive.
And again, what road they choose is also unique to the individual as well as to the species. You know, what I heard about how eels fight to the death, right? Other species don't fight to the death. Some do, but some don't.
And what I was told is they're not fully here. You know, they're in other words, they're very unevolved, if you know what I mean, that eels have not fully come into vibrationally the space that other species have. Does that make sense?
This also says a lot about humans being unevolved too.
But again, where are we choosing to focus? Because the reason the animals haven't given up on us is because if they hear our thoughts and they get all this information globally, they know about all the millions of beautiful humans that are waking up, that are choosing, if you will, the high road. This is how I'm going to live my life. This is how I'm going to treat other people, animals, the planet. You know, there's a lot of beauty going on right now. And that's
and you had that in your book because there was a chimp who was quite negative.
Oh, yeah. Sounded just like a human. That one blew my mind. I was so excited to tune into chimps after hearing from these other species. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do Jane Goodall proud. And then I get, what is this, another study? I'm like, oh my goodness. He said, no, it's not a study. And he's like, yeah, good luck to you. It's too late. And just negative, negative, negative. And yet, and this is actually a fun story. A couple months later, after this kind of negative chimp, like, it's too late. You've destroyed our habitats. It's going to be darkness. It's going to be destruction. You know, humankind has set this ball in motion and it's too late. Okay, great. A few months later, the chimps come through and they're jumping up and down and they're like, we almost gave up on you, humans, but in the last few months, the changes have been miraculous. Great efforts going on, especially in Asia. I had no idea what they were talking about. 4 months later, I see what China is doing. They just announced 60,000 soldiers are now going to be redeployed to plant trees. There was this Disney Asia movie that came out. Hundreds of thousands of acres designated to preserving these rare species, you know, in the middle of China. And I'm just like, the chimps knew this before we did. Got it from the grid, you know?
Right. That's interesting. Yeah.
So, there's stuff going on.
Yeah. And you know, so what's exciting is that not only is there so much in your book that is really an opportunity for everybody to read, but they still talk to you.
Well, you know, I'd like to tell everybody, look, it's not like I just walk around and it's like Dr. Doolittle and I never have to sit still. I never have to go through quiet times where they don't show up. They do lead busy lives. And they actually said, you can't use this as a crutch. I went, oh, you know, like I'm learning and I can't hide behind the animals and have that be my full definition of self. I'm still on a path. I still have to be human and grow and deal with discomfort. And it's not like I always have my animals going, yeah, yeah, yeah. But they have done some really fun things since the book, I must tell you. There are super athletes in the animal world.
Yes.
There are. Like the Olympics kind of, I mean, they, squirrels, Peter the Magnificent. I mean, I'm not kidding, but you can call me Pete. And just trying to say, you know, we're much more like you than you think. We have to train and push ourselves every day. I'm never afraid. Others fall to their death, but not me. But we can't dawdle because we still have to find our own food and care for our families. And we have to show up when we don't want to or our leg hurts.
Wow. No, that's beautiful. You know, that's so much fun in your book is that you hear from so many different animals and they all have different stories. And you know, and then I come back to the horses because certainly they're so wise, and to be with horses, just to be in horse country and to be around horses, and allow them to befriend us. You know, and what they talk about in the book is to be still and be patient. You know, so people think, oh, you know, if I go to a horse, I need to befriend it. I need to, you know, make sure it likes me and all these things. And it's like, no, maybe if you just sit still, a horse will figure you out and decide whether it wants to like you or not.
Exactly right. Just share reality with that other being. I mean, here's something to remember. You see beautiful horses and beautiful farms with these fences. They could jump that fence at any moment. They choose not to.
Right.
None of those fences keep the horses in. It's almost like comedic. All of them can jump a 6-foot fence, or not all of them, but most of them. They choose to partner with humans. I've had many horse owners tell me, oh, he's not in there right now. I don't, go look at him. He's just checked out. And the very first horse that blew my mind told me, we leave our bodies to connect with all that is because our frequency gets lower when being in a body. You know, because they said they send love to humans all the time. And when I had this thought, well, where did they get the energy from? He said, we constantly leave our bodies to reconnect with all there is, all that is, the universe, God, whatever you want to call it.
Wow.
Yeah. So they really are ethereal animals. That's what the rhino told me when we were talking about dreaming. They said, ah, but horses are ethereal and travel at night. They dream.
This is so much fun. We're getting near the end of the show, and you know, it's, we can go on, and hopefully we'll talk another time.
That would be great.
So much fun talking with you. And so how can people find your book and you and et cetera?
Sure. My main website where they can find the blog, they could get more info about the book, is simply smendelson, MENDELSON.com. And that's kind of, you know, info central. Everything is there.
Right. And you're also on Amazon and et cetera.
Thank you. Yes, the book and the cards are both listed. The cards are listed right under the book on Amazon. So thank you for reminding me of that one.
Okay, good. So this is so much fun. And you're from New York or Connecticut and around, mm-hmm. you know, but you're living in Florida right now.
Yeah, you know, doing work on horses' bodies, you know, in -7, eventually I got to the point, I said, I think I could do this an easier way. But again, you don't necessarily know if what you're doing at a moment is a stepping stone or a landing pad. And when I came down here, I guess, you know, it was supposed to happen because then I had access to these horses that just changed everything for me. So it was a good move. But I'm still a New Yorker in my heart.
That's nice. So, but you know, this is a wonderful journey that we should all maybe open to as much as possible, and maybe reading your book and getting a feel for this, animals will know that.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what, this is just the beginning. You know, the idea is to find ways to share this information, you know, sound bites, a YouTube channel, whatever it is, because it's almost sometimes like reading scripture. You know, you read a passage and you're like, whoa. You know, that can change the way I look at things.
Right, and also change the way animals look at you. So this is so great. Sandra Mendelson, thank you so much for being an Energy Stew. I really love talking with you.
Thank you. The feeling's mutual.
And this is, thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Mm-hmm.